I remember smoking DMT first time. I was scared to death to do it. Man, I was so scared. I prayed, oh my gosh. I went to this different dimension. Different dimension. I was scared. Man, I'm not going to lie. Like, I was petrified of it. What if I never come back from this? My inner voice was like, get ready for the ride of your life.
This is exclusive for me, by the way. I'm going to talk about this.
Tell it all.
They has done to say this, but I've done DMT. I ended up doing the DMT on the first time I've done it.
You woke up naked.
Straight out the lab. Cody, no love, my friend. Thank you so much. Normally I have an intro. Straight out the lab, joined today by former UFC champion who is on the trajectory to getting that belt back. Cody, no love. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Man, I'm glad to be here. 2 years in the making. We see each other a lot. Hey, let's get on the podcast.
I know.
Text sometimes, but hey, you know how busy life is. And
I know.
Especially with children. Like you said, you had the daddy daycare today. We made it work. We're here a little later than, like you said, you usually film your podcast. But we're here. We're making it happen.
And we've locked it in, yeah. And I appreciate you, Matt, chasing me as much as... I don't think we've really chased each other. It's been... like, hey, we need to do the podcast. Next thing, something else happens. Then I'm out of town. Hey, bro, I'm in town this week, and it's two passing ships. Yeah. But we're finally on, my man. So thank you very much for jumping in. I know we're, a couple of weeks away from your next fight, Figueiredo, ex-UFC champ. That's going to be a big fight for you. Great fight for you. As my bloody phone is ringing, totally unprofessional. Yeah, sorry, my man.
Oh, good. Yeah, but, amazing opportunity. Former world champion. Going head-to-head in UFC 300, big card. We'll open up at the card where the first fight of the night. Fans get there early, and we'll start it off with an entertaining fight.
Yeah, that's a big card. One that is being sold out, being promoted to the highest. Again, so see you now back on the chase, that hunger that I know you and I obviously have a personal relationship, but for me to see the climb you've had, the story you've had, and so many different chapters... and now on this title run again, what are some of the things that you've learned now in this last couple of years compared to the last chase for the title?
I think what's different from my first rise to being a world champion and this rise now that I'm back on, just experience within life, but also the career. I was 23 years old when I got in the UFC. And then I won the world title under 2 years in the UFC. Five fights in, I was in the UFC, and then I became world champion. I had 11 professional fights. So the experience, learning a lot about the business as well, that's a huge different. I just wanted to, at the end of the day, I'm a fighter. We just want to fight. That's what I was just so focused on. But being able to balance that, being able to balance things that come with the lifestyle, or comes with being a champion or a former champion. And obviously, things along the way, I became a father. So my son, Kai, is about to turn 6 in 2 weeks. Just finding the balance of not looking so far ahead, like, what's next? I think when I lost the world championship, that I was constantly like, I got to get it back. I got to get it back. And not overlooking any fight, but looking back like, oh, I win this fight. I'm going to fight back for the title. It was overlooking it, per se, because I was like, hey, one more fight. The UFC's like, hey, win this fight. You're fighting for the title. So trying to just live more in the present, be more grounded. Be more just present with everything. I think that for us, it's a lot of we're judged off of wins and losses. It's either winning the fight or you're losing the fight. So we fixate on we got to win or what comes with the loss. So just being present with the daily grind, being consistent with your work, your whatever you need to help outside of the career, but also the mentality, having those values too, and that helps out with balancing. You can't be just a fighter all day. You have to go home. You're a father. You have so many different hats you have to wear. Mm-hmm. So just finding the balance with that has helped out where I'm at. Another thing is life experience.
Yeah, and prior to your son being born, it was just you and your team, right? It was a self-purpose to win the belt.
Yeah, wild boys. That's what I can say. 23, 24, 25 years, 23 to 25, living in Sacramento with Team Alpha Male and just chasing the dream that you're one of the baddest dudes in the planet. It's fun. It was just every day was just wake up, go train, enjoy life. Uriah was such a good mentor with that. He said, everyone has the same hours in the day. It's like, what do you do with that? He said, hey, if you want to go, he'd always would say this. He said, don't miss practice. Schedule things around practice. Make sure you show up on time. Be here. Don't miss practice. Because if you want to go on the end of the day and you already did your training sessions and just hang out, drink a beer, and beat off, then you do that outside of training. That's what he always would tell us at the end of the group training and stuff. And we're just all looking at him like, man, I don't think I've ever just sat down, cracked a cold one over, and just beat off. He would always say that. I'm like, man, so maybe smoke a joint, dude. I'm not a crack a cold one. But he was always talking and preaching to us, something that I always listened to after training sessions. Just little things about being a martial artist. I didn't grow up in a dojo. I didn't grow up in jiu-jitsu. I grew up wrestling. I grew up boxing. Those are disciplinaries of martial arts, but they're not, you don't have a belt rank. You don't bow to your sensei, any of that stuff. It's not a dojo, like I said. Nothing wrong with those. I think they all have great values and add so much to people's life and what they can gain with the belt ranking and having that. But for us, we just grew up different. It's a different sport. A lot of those guys came from that kind of background. So he would preach to us and teach us, like, hey, be a martial artist. Live the martial arts lifestyle. That's sleeping, eating, training right. So when I was out there, I really took me under his wing. He was one of the greatest bantamweights and featherweights for so long. Mm-hmm. And the team that he built and everyone that just went together and became amazing fighters. When I went out there, we had so many top guys. Chad Mendez, TJ Dillashaw, Danny Castillo, Joe Benavidez. The list goes on and on. Andre Feely, Chris Holdsworth, Lance Palmer, all these guys. It was just, the room was Danny Castillo. All these guys were like the guys that I grew up watching, the WC, the UFC, Strikeforce, King of the Cage. Mm. So it was great to go out there and just and chase that dream. It's 22 years old when I went out there.
Wow, 22. Yeah. And you're surrounded with, again, all them savages, featherweight, bantamweight, the best. Yes. Truly sharpened your sword.
Yeah, I was a big fish in a small pond before going to Alpha Male. So I was like, how great can you be? How great are you when you're going with guys that might not be at that level? Not that they weren't that. I had a lot of good training partners when I was at in Pittsburgh and Cleveland and in Ohio. As the cream of the crop was out at Team Alpha Male for the lighter weight guys. Mm-hmm. So I had to go out there and test myself. And that was like my ultimate goal. Like, I remember tweeting to Uriah about, one day I'm going to make out to the gym. And he like tweeted me back. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He said, I'm going to check out some of your fights. And it wasn't until 4 or 5 years later that I made it out there. So, yeah. I mean, he remembers that. Remember that tweet? He's like, yeah, I remember watching. Because I had 3 amateur fights, you know, posted up on YouTube off of a shitty-ass cell phone, you know, from your friend, drunk, yelling stupid shit.
All over the place. Elbow. No, stand up. Use the other hand.
It's like, yeah, you can't use elbows in amateur. And everyone shit. Just, elbow. I'm like, dude, come on.
I know. Take us back to that time. I want to, obviously, we've got so many different things and so many different topics I want to talk about, but since we're on the topic of you going to Alpha Male, 22 years old, because when I came to the United States, I was first 19 and I came back at 21 and big fish, small pond. I'd won everything as an amateur. I came over here, nobody gave a shit. But walking into the gym, I had to earn my stripes and I trained with the best to get that respect. So take us back to a 22-year-old Cody moving from Ohio, Pittsburgh, to then coming to Sacramento and obviously all the changes that comes with it.
Yeah, it was the excitement. And I was always, growing up, I hated change. I thought change in a negative way. I would come home from school, my mom would have the whole house reorganized, the couch flipped around, and I would literally physically couldn't be in that room. I would get sick because of change. I didn't like it. I liked the things the way they were. If anything changed like that, it physically made me sick ever since I can remember. But this was different. Like, when I moved out there, it was the uncertainty of what was going to happen, but I went out there for a reason. Went out there for a reason. First, to test the show, test myself against the best. And I remember when I first went out to that room and just opened up the gym doors and just the energy you felt from that. It's like, wow, these dudes are getting after it. This is what I need to do. And I came from a gym that was in a horse barn, kerosene and heaters in the cold. And like, we just hit pads. And luckily, I had my uncle that taught me boxing. I had a good wrestling background growing up, wrestling in Ohio in a very tough state. Wrestling was life for us. We traveled around every weekend. Luckily, our mother let us go and wrestle and do that, and my brother both excelled at that. But going there and learning like how to train properly, trying to train as a martial arts, like, oh, okay, we're doing punches, the fit-ins, the takedowns, the work back up, like drilling. I'm like, oh, I was just used to hitting pads, bag work, and sparring. And a lot of the times a lot of the guys I sparred with boxers, so they didn't like really want to kick. So we're like, all right, well, let's do boxing with takedowns. You know, so we just dumped the boxers on the head, pissing them back up, and then we'd box rounds. So going out there and really learning how to put your full tool sets, your tools together and train. Alpha Male was great at that. I've been around so many different gyms. The structure that they have out there in the system, of just every day was 9 o'clock pro practice. I like that because I'm up early, ready to go. Like by 9 to 10:30, 11, you're done with your practice. You have lunch, train again at 12:30. You're ready. You have two workouts in by 1, 2 o'clock. So Uriah ran it like a Division One wrestling program. A lot of our core group of his fighters were all Division One, ex-Division One wrestlers, NCAA All-Americans that came there to fight. And he just had a good system that just they just excelled on.
When did you feel like you were, yeah, this is what I want to do? And did you feel like, due to not playing time, because you were obviously coming in with an incredible set of tools, right? Obviously, your amateur background. But again, going to Alpha Male, having all these guys who chasing titles, have titles, had won titles. To be around that, did you feel instantaneously, like, okay, I know I'm at this level. I just need to improve in this certain thing.
I've always felt like I've always trained at the level of my competition or training partners. If I'm going with a good guy, I rise to the occasion. And like I'm going with even when I used to wrestle as a younger kid, if it wasn't such a good kid that I wrestled, I'd wrestle down to his level. But if it was a good kid that I'd wrestle above. So like being there and just meshing our skills together, sparring with these guys and training with them, I felt good. Like I felt amazing. That's what I needed. That was a huge confidence booster for me to be like, all right, here we are. We're doing this. And I know it's just practice. We're talking about practice. But it's nice to know when you consistently be able to show up and put yourself through those tests. Those are some hard rounds, hard sparring rounds. You got Chad Mendez, you know, you got TJ Dillashaw, you got Chris Holdsworth. He was the baddest dude out there. That dude was just amazing.
Wow.
Amazing. One of the best all-around martial artists I've ever trained with and ever just made. He was a good wrestler, amazing striker, jiu-jitsu out of this world. But he was so smart with his fight IQ and how he had dissected even just sparring. He was like, all right, he would come ready to spar. He'd film sparring and study it. And I remember he had this little laptop that he had clips of like GSP's jab to a single leg, and he had 15 breakdowns, or GSP's outside double leg. He'd have all these, and he'd watch him over and then drill him and put him into live action. And like I said, going out there doing that, like I felt good with everybody. But I remember Chris, man, he fucked me up one time. Like he legit fucked me up. He hit me with a 1-2 step back uppercut, and then he did like a flying knee. Everything hit me. I was like, damn, I was gonna take this dude down. So I took him down. Next thing you know, I'm fighting out of a triangle. So I get out of the triangle. Next thing you know, this dude's on my fucking back. I'm like, who is this guy? I didn't know who he was at the time. And this is right before he won the Ultimate Fighter. He was getting ready to go for the finale. And I knew of basically everyone there, but he was just real quiet, stick to himself. And I was like, damn, I got to get with this dude. I'm like, this guy was an animal everywhere. So I was like, let me follow you around. Let me train like you. Let me just take me under your wing. Let's go. And that dude worked so hard. His work ethic and just his consistency and his mental fortitude to push through injuries and setbacks and where he came from, the story that he has, was amazing. He was a big band weight, too. And I was dropping back down the band weight, so he helped me out with nutrition and just training. I've never seen anyone train like that.
So sounds like
a true mentor. And his career was cut short. The UFC ended up going undefeated, amateur, pro, Ultimate Fighter champion, the most dominant Ultimate Fighter champion, and to date, and then he became my coach. He was there since my second professional fight all the way up till I won a world championship. So we've had some just great times there. Grew family like crazy. Chris was there. That's one of the guys that I can always say, dude, I always will tell that story about Chris was the baddest dude out there.
I was going to bring him up too, because what a true story of seeing you from like this young guy who came in with so much talent and molding you into the champion that you became.
Yeah, you know, he's had a lot of life experience too, yeah, with his upbringing and things that happened in his life, and really martial arts saved his life when he gave everything to it. I mean, he runs a amazing Chris Holdsworth Academy and Citrus Heights
Jiu-Jitsu
Academy. Yeah, shot killing it. Just amazing, you know, what he's able to do, and he's still just giving back to the sport, you know, the martial arts that you know helped him out. But just amazing guy all around, always there for you, shows up, you know, every camp, you know, busted up, beat up, and just ready to go. So we've had such good times with him, and he's getting ready to corner a lot of guys in the Miami card next week. And I think Macy Barber he's working with, so he's going down there. He still works with Darren Elkins and Josh Emmett and some of the Alpha Male guys, but he's doing his own thing now at his own academy, which I'm happy for him.
Oh, good. Congrats. Yeah. I didn't know he had his own academy. Congrats to Chris. When did you open that up?
I think right during COVID.
Okay.
Like COVID, yeah, I think during COVID. So he built it during COVID. I mean, made a businessman. He was always grinding, hustling, and doing his thing. We told him, like, hey, man, like, you should do your own thing. You should do your own thing. You're at this age, you're not going to fight again. Build your own business. People are here. You're a great instructor, a great martial artist. You've done it your whole life. Like, what else are you going to do? Yeah. So finally took that dive of faith and did it. And he has over 100 students. He has a few black belts that he's had ranked up since he's had him a few belt ranks. He's given out, I think, 2 or 3 black belts now, I want to say. But, yeah, his black belts are tough, too. They move exactly like him, and he has that style. He's phenomenal. Yeah, shout out to him.
Obviously, there's so many things that you mentioned right there. But since we're talking about the coaching element, I'm not putting the cart before the horse, but is that something of an interest for you later on after you finish retired?
I didn't think that I'd ever want to be a coach, but I think moving out here and having to do my own camps and, like, prioritizing myself and what I need to do and then helping out, like, some guys that come into, I might have, say, I have a striking class tomorrow. I have a kickboxing class that I'm doing with my coach, and they come in and I'm just, and then I get it passionate about, like, showing, hey, maybe I look around the room sometimes and I'm like, oh, they're not doing the correct technique. Like, I just show them and I get excited to show them and just, so yeah, it's like, what am I going to do after I'm done fighting? I have a few things, but I've trained and been into combat sports my whole entire life. So years ago, if you asked me that question, I would say, oh, no, there's no way. Because I can't stand people that are weak-minded. I can't do it. I can't do it. I want to take their glove off every 20 seconds. No, you got a 3-minute round, a 5-minute round. You get a break. You get a minute break. Get your water. I just couldn't do it. But I think that's something that I might want to get into. Then now that I'm more doing my own training and helping out a lot with some of the fighters that are in, that come in town, and I run my own classes. Hey, guys, join in. And I like showing stuff that works for me, or seeing a different type of attacks, from strikes to fit ins, the whole martial arts. Yeah, I think I would like to maybe do something like that.
Yeah, I think for myself, just as you mentioned, I love helping people out. I got a lot of young guys that I've helped out, but I'd never be a coach, like a claimed coach.
Right. This is my, I'm clocking in. Yeah, exactly. I'll come in, show some things and help out. And if they wanted me to be in their camps or watch sparring or get advice from, I would love to. How many kids come from the same background that we did that just want a shot? Just need to be seen. And that's felt like that's what I was. I just needed to be seen. I just needed to be seen just like you. Come from where you came to the States and made it happen.
Yeah. Talking of which, nice segue, by the way. We both have come from very humble upbringings, and both of us have truly earned everything that we've got today. It's not been given, it's been earned. We put ourselves in them situations, moving from our family or our creature comforts. And as you mentioned earlier, you don't like change. So for you to start off with where you are now, I want to talk about that, though, your early beginnings and your upbringing, because that truly is such a big part of the Cody Garbrandt that I know and I've got to learn to love. Because you truly have had, just no silver spoon, right? You've been scrapping since the beginning. But tell us about your upbringing, and I'd love to hear some of these stories that come from it.
Yeah, so my mother was a single mother, and she raised us at a young age. My brother is 10 and a half months older than me, Zach. So my uncle was in wrestling. So he'd go in high school, she would take us to the wrestling matches, both on our hips, and we'd go watch our uncle wrestle. So we were always in the gym. We always liked that. And we were rambunctious kids. Me and Zach always I always remember fighting Zach or wrestling Zach, and usually Zach just kicking the shit out of me because he's always like 100 pounds bigger than me, you know, always. Like, there's baby pictures, and like, he's only 10 months older than me. He looks like he's a 3-year-old to a newborn. Like, I don't know if he just stole my bottles or what. Like, I'm the smallest one in my family. So I think I blame it on Zach. But yeah, growing up and doing that, our father was in and out of prison, you know, was never in our life. But my uncle, Robert Meese, is my real father's brother. He was our father figure, basically. He would come in, and he had a life sentence at 15 years old, got acquitted of charges 23 months later, gave himself to the Lord, found boxing. He would take us around. He would take us to the gym. I remember when he was fighting, always going to the gym, watching him train, and went to a lot of his fights growing up. I know when we were 5, 6 years old. And so we were always just into the gyms and the wrestling, like something like we looked up to our uncles. Like, that's... Our father wasn't there, so we looked up to our uncles with tickets to the gym. We remember go seeing him in wrestling. Just osmosis, like seeing that. So I think that's what really sparked my interest in wanting to do something like that. But also the mother that I had, you know, she got us into wrestling at a young age, and we were really good at it. You know, we didn't know it. we had a Claymont novice training thing. It was 1 week you trained, the high schoolers trained you, and then you were categorized in weight. And on Saturday, you would wrestle everybody in your weight class. And me and my brother would always win it. We're young, we're five, 6 years old. So we thought that was wrestling until we got more and more involved in wrestling. And then it was like, oh, there's open tournaments. Oh, there's national tournaments. Oh, there's tournaments all over the country. Like, the wrestling was huge. And I remember we were going to our first open wrestling tournament, just falling in love with it, like competition and just doing it. And then wanting, oh, well, I want to be on Team Ohio. Like, I want to be on this to wrestle off and earn your spot. Like you said earlier, we've always earned what we have. And that's what I loved about wrestling. It's like, no, it's not. Sorry. We play Pee-wee football. Johnny's mom comes in crying to the coach because Johnny's not the quarterback. But Johnny sucks. You know, Johnny, but true. Hey, his mom, the coach, I'm not getting paid for this. All right, Johnny, you're the quarterback. And we go get our ass kicked every game. But that's another thing, too. Our mom never let us quit any sport that we ever went out. She's like, listen, you're going to finish this season. I don't care if you don't like the coach. I don't care if you don't start. You got to work hard to start. You know, all this stuff. You'll not quit in season. You don't have to go out next year. But you have to finish the season. So I think that what she instilled in us, the never quit, never give up, no matter what, super thankful and grateful for her that she never let us quit. Even when it was, man, I remember one season we went, didn't win a game of football. Our coach sucked. His son was a quarterback.
Of course.
Yeah. Like, here we are, but like, and he played this, ran 52 counter every play. Everybody, and it's Pee-wee football. It's not like we're playing in the NFL, but every coach has, you know, can know what we're running. It was horrible. And but we didn't have to go out the next year. But we did, you know, we stuck it out because we loved it. The next year we ended up going undefeated and winning the Super Bowl.
Damn.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was just like little things like that. So her instilling us to never give up, never quit, no matter what, earn your spot. But that's what I loved about wrestling. I loved about fighting, too. But she never really let us fight. Like, she didn't want us to box. She didn't want us to be punchy. Like, Mom, we were going, you know how many concussions I had in Pop Warner? I was 45 pounds in kindergarten, maybe even littler. Dude, I couldn't remember. I was getting so pissed off because the pants were too big, the pads in the head. And I remember we always had to run down these big-ass trees and back. And I hated it because I'm a speed guy. I'm not endurance. Like, I don't like to learn long. Especially with those pants in the head. She brings it up all the time. She goes, you were just so little. You look like a little bobblehead. Your head was like going on. And it used to go down and I would always fall because the pants would, and I'd be pulling the pants up, trying to hold the helmet on like the whole entire time. And then there's Zach. He's a brute. Like, just, it was great. So it was, and also too, having a brother that was so competitive and just couple of screws loose in his head that he was very mental about. Oh, we don't remember. Oh, we were third grade, maybe fourth grade, and this coach made us do push-ups, and all these kids are crying, dropping to the knees, and Zach looks over at me, and he's, you don't fucking drop down. I'm worse shitting there, shaking. I mean, we had to do 200 push-ups. This is during practice. I think the coach was just at it one time, and I just remember Zach saying, we don't drop, you know, we don't give up. But he was always that reasoning voice, like when, if you wanted to break or give up, I always had him growing up, like playing football and in the wrestling room. So have that never quit attitude still in from our mom, but also having a brother that's like, hey, and sometimes we'd go grow up street fighting and he'd be like, dude, we never jumped or anything like that. He'd be at my fights, I'd be his fights. He'd be like, hey, dude,
fights.
He's like, you ain't letting this dude beat your ass. We're like fourth grade, fifth grade. He's like, you're beating this dude's ass. You're going to fight me. I'm like, I don't want to fight Zach because I already know that I'm getting my ass kicked by Zach. So I got a better chance than this guy. And things like that. So having him as a brother and just always there, even today, like I'm so super proud of him, the father that he is and the man that he is and everything that he's overcame as well from similar backgrounds and growing up how we did. Just, he's an amazing father. So he'll message me all the time, and he's not very emotional or anything like that, but he'll just say how proud he is of me and things like that. That means the world to me, hearing that from someone that's had the same upbringing as you and the same struggles, and can see how hard it is that we work to get to where we're at, and also the opportunities that we still have lay in front of us.
Yeah, it's all the unseen things that you guys have gone through that people will see, as you mentioned earlier, they'll judge you on your last fight, right?
Yeah.
But the struggle you've had to come from Ohio to where you are now is one hell of a story, and you've been scrapping, as you said, since a kid.
Yeah. Sometimes for survival, sometimes just food on the table. Since a kid, still putting food on the table. That's it. And like you said, just scrapping every day to get to where you want, but having the opportunities and being judged off of your last fight, win or loss. Man, I'm a kid from Ohio that had a dream. I'm getting to talk to Flex. I'm gonna hear it. You know, I mean, like, it's little things like that. Like, I don't take for granted. I never have, never will, because I look at it like, what if I didn't do this, or what if I didn't do that? Like, where would I be at?
Where would you be at?
I have no idea. It's a scary thought, to be honest. I seem to think about that pretty often, especially when I'm in camp and the grind, and I chose to do this. You know what I mean? No one's putting a gun to my head saying, hey, get up, go do X, Y, and Z today. It's just, you get up and do it. Some people, and same with you. Like, how can you do that every day, in and out, in and out? For me, like I said, I don't like change, so my schedule is my schedule. It might change because martial arts is one day we might have to wrestle and lift. The next day we have to do sparring and lift. So it's a little bit different each day, but my schedule is the same Monday through Saturday. It's the same training schedule, same time, same kind of things that I'm working on, especially in camp, and you have, you know, opponent that you're working for. Now, outside of camp, you can do different things, but I like that. I like to have that set goal. It's 6 weeks out. I have 6 weeks. I'm not focusing about fight day right now. I'm focusing on being present here. I'm speaking to you. What do I have after this? Awesome dinner that my girlfriend's going to cook. Then I get ready for tomorrow. I have 3 training sessions tomorrow. And I just take one day at a time. Because like I said earlier in the podcast, I've tried to jump forward too much in life. Like, man, life's so beautiful. You got to be present. And I've constantly been reminded by a lot of friends and people that care about me. And working with a sports therapist. For the last 2 years that I've been here, and the UFC has provided that. Yeah. Micah, he's great. Ex-MLB player. Just phenomenal guy.
What kind of things are you working on?
Man, honestly, it varies. It varies on what we're working on. But for me, like, I was having a thing of not being present. Like, walking to the octagon, I'm like, oh, man, I better win this fight. What about, we're going to go do this? No, it's, man, they've got another guy that's going to try to kill you in there. You're like, be present. And then just really trying to do that in sensories, like when you get in the octagon or you feel the canvas, or you feel like me, if you ever see my fight, I rub my finger up against the cage and just feel like a little bit of vibration. I feel like that's something that kind of gets me grounded, like, all right, we're here. Sensories.
Interesting.
Sensories, little things like that. Your coaches, your voices.
Yeah.
Like last time I was fighting and I was like, oh man, I'm getting ready to fight. And I look in the crowd, I was like, oh shit, there's Theo Vaughn. Fuck yeah, dude. I was like, hell yeah. And he's like saying some of the Theo shit. He's like, oh hell yeah, man. I was like, oh, and then I snap back into it, but I was like, fuck yeah, it's Theo Vaughn, hell yeah. Little things like that. You just get, I'm taken away by, but you know, just to be grounded, just to be present, you know, like thinking about the wins and all. You got 15 minutes. Who cares about this win or loss right now? You've got to be right now because this guy's going to try to do that to you. So that's what we work on a lot today. Like I said, I did a heat acclimation to help get my weight down to get ready for the stress of the heat. So a lot of people, we cut that weight and it's so stressful. That's why a lot of people fall out the next day from their fight because they're sick and they can't regain that because their body's not used to that stress and the sauna and the heat.
Tell us what you just done today.
So today I did a 30-minute bike ride inside of a sauna and it was about 115 degrees. And I had to keep the RPMs about 120 average to burn. And my nutritionist, Charles, shout out to Charles at the UFCPI, phenomenal, amazing. This is actually the first fight that we're working together with, and it's just been phenomenal. He gives all the diet plan, nutrition plans to my girl. She cooks and does it. So today was the heat acclimation, the first heat acclimation, because I've had the last two fights were pretty bad weight cuts for me. I lost my voice, my vision, my vitals were real bad, suffered. So it takes the guessing game out of it. So you go in there, you start, he's writing down, all right, you start beating up sweat on your hands 7 minutes in, and we're at this. So you're not just going in a sauna 180 degrees and sitting there and just frying yourself. So it takes a lot of the guessing out of it. And then you check my temperature every 5 minutes. It doesn't want us to get over 103, 102, 102, 101, 102 is where you want to stay at, because when you go over 103, it's more stress to your body. And it's like, all right, like you get in that fight or flight where you start getting real dizzy. And that's how I was the last 3 hours of my last weight cut, just it was brutal. And then the next day, I had no legs underneath me. My legs were gone. So you stress your body out so much, it takes so long to recover. Yeah. So doing it now, but also getting the reads, like, all right, Cody started sweating at 7 minutes in. He was at this RPM on the bike. He was this temperature. So you do that for 30 minutes. And the whole time, he's checking your temperature and making sure that it doesn't go over 103. So box breathing, if it's starting to get higher, just breathing. And then my therapist was outside of the sauna, because it's a portable one. And he's talking to me like we're going, because I actually double booked. I usually have therapy every Thursday at 10.
Kill two birds
with one stone. Hey, I'm like, cool, yeah, I'm just going to just sweat here. And we were talking and just going through our therapy sessions and just like keeping our mind off of being hot, being tired, being fatigued inside there. And it went by fast. And then you get it right out of there and you go down to the hot tub. And hot tub, I'm not too sure how hot it was. Probably 104, 105.
The word right there is fucking hot, right?
Yeah, hot. After, yeah, because you just got done in there. So I'm like, and the hot tub, I'm good. I went into the house. I'm 10 minutes. I'm good. Kai wants to be in there until his skin's pruned. I'm like, let's go. I'm done. I'm getting hot. So it was like 30 minutes. I'm like, dang. So I'm sitting there talking and just doing that, checking the temperature. And that's when you start feeling like, oh, head. It's more mental. Like the last couple of pounds are all mental. So it's just getting that guessing game out. Like, how long do I have to stay in the sauna? So I was able to lose 3.5% of my body weight.
Yeah.
In that hour. So I lost almost 6 pounds in an hour. From doing that.
Yeah.
But it was good. But now it takes a guessing game. Now we have the reads where you stress the body. We might have to only go 15 minutes in there, take 5 minutes off 15. So it's not stressing your body. It's where you're only down on weight. You make 136 for, you might be hold that for 45 minutes or 30 minutes, wherever, till you go to the official scale, weigh in, and then you start hydrating.
Wow.
So that gives you more ample time to rehydrate, refuel, and be better for the next day.
This new version of the cut compared to the old, I'm sure you must be, there's just that extra added element to the whole fight when you have such a crazy cut too, right?
It does. It's a war of nutrition no matter what. Like, you're fighting a guy, like, say if he has a bad weight cut, you know, it might not show in the first round, but the second, third round, you see a lot of fighters start to fatigue and trail out, and could be a bad weight cut, be something that they ate. Everyone wants to weigh, oh, I made weight, and they want to go eat all the shit they haven't had in their body for 8 weeks. I see people doing that all the time. I cannot believe that they do this.
Destroy your stomach,
your energy, and for all that. Yeah, and Charles and the nutrition team at the UFC, they do thousands of weight cuts a year. So they just keep getting data and better. It's amazing. It's right here. I literally go to the UFC PI and I have everything there.
Just takes all the guessing game out.
All the guessing game out. Because, yeah, I mean, we've all done old school weight cuts, you know.
What would be an old school weight cut for the audience listening? What is one of the most hellish ones?
Just lock yourself into a sauna and just sweat it out.
Stay there until you...
I was doing that last fight. Bryce Mitchell was in that damn sauna for 2 hours straight. And he'd come out... God. Jump in the cold plunge, butt ass naked. The security has to come. Like, hey, Bryce, you can't be jumping in this cold plunge naked. You know what I mean? He didn't give a fuck. This he was guy. In the sauna, and he had 8 pounds. He would come out, and I think he did 30 minutes, and he was like, I lost 3 pounds. I was like, hell yeah! I'm like, after 30 minutes in the sauna, you're fried. He was in there for 2 hours, just cooking. Wow. He made weight, but that's like old school shit. Like, you don't have to do that. I think there's a lot of us don't know unless you come in here, and I think a lot of athletes that are in the UFC should utilize the performance institutes. That's the best of the best. They want their fighters to make weight. They want them to be healthy. They want them to go out there and put on performances. So they're not going to just have any Joe Schmo in here saying, hey, you're going to do the X, Y, and Z and it's going to work. No, it's trialed and tested. Like I said, thousands of athletes use these kind of same protocols.
I was over in the PI senior, of course,
a couple two weeks ago.
And I was blown away because it was the first time that I'd gone there. Obviously, I've been to pretty much every fucking room in the UFC HQ. Right. But then the PI, I left back for somebody to bring me in and introduce me to the PI, right? But then I'd done the celebrity sweat thing. And I walked in and I was blown away just by how data-driven they are. Everything in there from, I'd done neck strength to eye-to-hand coordination. Everything that, obviously, when you think back and you think, of course, this all makes sense. But all under one roof and free for all the UFC fighters.
Yeah.
It's incredible, bro.
It's amazing. Had that coming up in the UFC when I was coming up. I was, man, fighting just to survive until I was in the first main event. You know what I mean? A lot of these kids that are coming up get free food, free PT, free strength and conditioning. And not always free is good, right? We know that in our industries. Yeah. But this is top level.
This is top level.
I brought up my buddy Brazilian kid that's came into Alpha Male and his girlfriend's actually in the UFC. I'm like, bro, this is where you guys need to be. Like, it's...
Do you sell Vegas like I do? I fucking recruit.
Honestly, I hated Vegas when I first moved here. It took me almost 2 years to finally, like, now, because I left my Alpha Male guys, my teammates, my coaches, that changed to where I was like, hey, you know what? I know what I need. I know what I need to get back to that mountain. I know what I need. I just need to put a plan in action, have people that believe in me as well, showing up, And it says, I found a great team. Yeah. You know, I got Mateus Knockouts, my striking coach. He's from Nova U now. Ali runs the grappling practices. I got sparring partners, strength and conditioning, Gavin Pratt, at the he's the head instructor at the PI. Just the load that we do, it's amazing. Like, I'm lifting 3 days a week hard and doing 10 to 12 mixed martial arts sessions a week too. So that's about 10 training sessions a week. With the injuries I've had, to still be able to push it like that, I haven't been able to do that since I was 23, 24 years old, 25. Wow. Didn't know any better. Didn't know I was sore and hurt and things were about to fall off because you're young. You don't care.
Yeah.
But now you're a little older and had some injuries and learned experience. It's great. You can't always be redlining.
And that was your mentality for a long time.
I think that's everybody's mentality. We're fighters. What the fuck? We're just going to train harder. We're going to lose. I'm going to train harder. It wasn't that. I was skilled. I had this. I had that. Okay, hey, maybe it's the mental side. Oh, I started working with the mental coach. Oh, wow. Was present in the fight. Was calm and relaxed in the fight. And continue to work. Not just, oh, one fight off. That's good. Work on it outside of just my fighting career. We talk about life and my son, my girl, like just everything, life. Because we're still, at the end of the day, people seem to forget we're still humans. We're blessed to have the skill set that we have and be able to accomplish things that we worked for. But still, at the end of the day, we're humans. We still have things that happen to us just like regular people do, just so that we have a platform that's it shared on. People seem to forget that we're humans at the end of the day.
That's tough. And I've obviously been on the brunt end of social media as of you too.
Yeah.
And having then to add that into the spokes of everything else that's going on, be focused, get everything else dialed down, make sure that you're turning a present for every fight, making sure that you're doing all these extra things and then dealing with all the bullshit on social media. How hard was that for you to navigate, good and bad?
I've always been like that, been in that kind of like, I wasn't supposed to make it. My mom was a single mother with two kids as a teenager, father incarcerated, like uncles all incarcerated almost their whole entire life. Addicts on both sides of my family. I wasn't supposed to make it this far. So for me, it's just living on spare time, I feel like. But I've worked for it when it came through a lot. But so for me, I've always had that, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. I even had my peers, my teachers saying, like, when I thought, told them I wanted to be a fighter. I was boxing and wrestling. Or I'm going to be a state champion as a freshman. Like, no one's ever done that where I was from. I did it because I believed in it. And I manifested it and I worked for it. And I wasn't going to have my teacher say that I can't do it. Or, hey, are you going to make a living? It was never for making a living. It's because I loved it. I think a lot of people turn down their passions because it's, is it going to make me rich or am I going to be able to live a good life? I didn't know. I just know that I loved to fight. I know what the feeling it made me do, even when I fought in the basement of a Mexican restaurant. It was my first fight. I loved it. I thought it was the most primal shit ever. It was awesome.
Basement of a restaurant.
Dude, it was awesome, yeah. Don Pablo's in New Philadelphia, my first boxing match. It was awesome, man. I was like, wow, this shit. And that's when I right there when I was able to finally fight.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. This is what I wanted to do.
Yeah. I know we did mention the social media side of things, but I just want to touch on that. Because the social media side of things is so fucking rampant.
It's anyone can get on and talk shit to you, but hey, are they going to say that shit to your face?
Of course not.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And if they had the balls to say that and do that, power to them. I'm still going to smack them in the shit.
Have you ever got caught up in a low in social media to get into your head at all?
No, not at all. You know what I mean? I wish I didn't have to have social media or anything like that. It'd be great. And honestly would. Even to like my last two fights, I really haven't done a lot of media.
So by
podcast, but yeah, we've been trying to knock this podcast out for 2 years. For me, yeah, I got to the point to where you don't have to talk about doing things. You know what I mean? This is great because we're having a conversation. Yeah. But like, hey, this media, MMA, say MMA junkie says this, and then they screw your words around. And it's like, it's not something I want to do. I don't need to. Like, I'm a former world champion. I'm a way back. I know what I have in this sport where I don't need to go out and do interviews to hype myself up or try to. I probably a time in my life where I was needed that. Oh, I needed to talk and feel stroke the ego, but give a fuck about any of that.
Different chapter.
Different chapter, yeah, for sure. Definitely when I say I was losing, I had to talk myself into it because I was trying to figure out what the fuck was wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know. It was a mental thing.
Yeah, that's tough, though, when you're, especially as fighters, if you had a loss or two. And then
I got knocked out 3 times in a row from being a world champion.
Yeah.
Thought I was living a nightmare. You know what I mean? I was going insane a little bit. I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do wrong? What am I doing wrong? I got to train harder. My body was breaking down. Train harder. Next fight, well, it wasn't that. Mentally, I was like going to these fights like already defeated.
Really?
Yeah, just, yeah, fuck it. Let's go on a barn burner. Let's see who wins. I got a 50-50 shot. 50-50 shot's pretty good. Rolling the dice, gambling, but I know my skill at. I just didn't want to be there. Wow. So by the time I got to the fight, walking out, wasn't there. And still, some of the fights, these last two fights, same thing, man. I just started drifting away, intrusive thoughts. In the fight, walking down the octagon until it was like in the mix of it. We're fainting in front of me. We're trying to land the first punch, first strike, until the actual fight's happening. I'm like, all right, this is where I'm at.
How do you catch yourself doing that, though?
Catch myself being drifting off. Yeah, I didn't know I was doing that. I knew that I was doing that. And, oh, fuck, I'm having these same feelings. And maybe this isn't what I want to do anymore. You know, that's what went in my mind, always in my mind. Maybe this isn't for me. So I had no emotion. I wasn't excited. I want to be scared going into a fight. I do. I want to be scared because when you're scared, you fear things. You fear what this adversary can do to you or is prepared to do to you. But I was just numb. And I didn't care. Not caring. Like, when I won the world championship, it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Like, I fixated on being a world champion for the longest time. It brought me through so many dark times. And it was great to say that I won that and see everyone happy for me and the people that were in my life from amateur all the way up to being a world champion and the people that came with me and infiltrated and filtered themselves in with the good notions and reasons being there was awesome, but it just wasn't fulfilling for me.
Why?
I don't know. I think because I focused on that being a world champion for so long that I didn't have what's next. I didn't have, what was my next goal? What was my next thing? Oh, wow, I did that. I did it with pretty much ease to be a world champion. Got in the UFC at 5-0. Obviously, when you're looking at it, I had a lot of setbacks, adversity that I overcome personally. But if you're looking at just my career, 5-0 in the UFC, 11-0 world champion, and the way that I was destroying everybody, I did it with ease. It didn't allow me to really focus on what was next. And I got into the Ultimate Fighter, and then I ended up tearing my back a whole year out. Then I was rushing back to get into the fight because I'm the champion. I got to defend my crown. This is my shit. And I didn't allow myself to manifest and visualize myself even in the octagon with TJ, let alone in training camp, because I was so banged up. But the UFC was trying to make this fight happen for so long, and I ended up having to pull out, and then it was postponed. I'll go to Germany, do all these injections. I did so many injections in that 1 year just to get there. Even 10 days before the fight, they flew me out. I was in Sacramento. They flew me out here and gave me 8 epidural shots just so I could walk. That was eight or 10 days before I flew to New York to fight TJ. But then again, here I am. I need money. I have a kid on the way.
Life of
the fight. What am I saying? Not no. And I almost had that fight. It was a horrible training camp. And not even the horrible training camp. I'm always way more skilled than these guys, 100%. It was the mental. Honestly, the mental thing.
That's crazy. Coming off that fight that won you the belt, I felt like that was probably, in my eyes, and I say this to many people, it's probably one of the best fights I've ever seen. It's one of my favorite. It's my favorite fight that you fought in. You just, the flow, everything was there.
It was great.
And to hear that, it's wild. It seemed like everything, all the stars aligned that day. But then now to hear this, it's amazing just what, and then what's really happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, it is, right? I would get taken back by it sometimes, revisiting those fights or that rise. Yeah. It's such a, it looks like, I just feel like it's a different person. It really was. I'm 32 now. I truly do. It feels like a lifetime ago. I've experienced and done so much in my life, and I'm very grateful and thankful for it. But yeah, that fight was awesome. That's something that Dominic Cruz is amazing. Honestly, he was so far advanced with his elusivity and his footwork and the way that he moved. Like, no one was doing that. And no one had the puzzle could solve that puzzle. He was doing that to everybody. And I was like, no, he's not doing that shit to me. He's not doing that shit to me.
Many say that's the best bantamweight fight in history. And many say also that's probably one of the best title fights in history, because it just seemed like you had the cheat code.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great. I remember smoking DMT first time. I never did any mushrooms, nothing. I did it about a month before with my buddy Aubrey. Out of his advice, I was sponsored with Onnit. And I was scared to death to do it. Man, I was so scared. I prayed. We did the saging down and all this, and we did the almost shaman thing. I've never done it. Everyone else was in the room did it prior, so I didn't know what was going on. And I took that first He's like, hit it till something feels funny. So I kept hitting it. I'm like hitting it like six. I'm like, dude, I'm not feeling anything. And I finally on like the sixth rib. Oh my gosh. I went to this different dimension. Different dimension. I just remember seeing me fighting Cruz and just his movement and the way he moved and everything. I was like, oh, this is crazy. And that was in my you call it a trip. I don't know. That's the only time I've ever done it. So just like out there, just blast it off. And so then we come back to, and we tell about our experiences and what we saw, what we did, and we do another round. Another round, I went back, and I was more calm, relaxed. I had that feeling before. I'm like, all right, this is what it is. Like, and Aubrey's always was telling us, hey, just know if something goes on in there, just know in 45 minutes, we'll be in the kitchen laughing, eating snacks. I went there so many times, dude. I was so scared of that trip. I was so scared of that trip. Yeah. It was. I'd never done anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Never mushrooms. Nothing. Smoked weed. You know. Ate edible. That was probably the closest experience to having out of body was an edible. The
you first smoked time weed edible.
Though. Oh, of course. Yeah.
I thought you said you didn't then. No, you fucking liar. Talking about DMT. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I smoked. Yeah, no, I haven't smoked. I've been off the ganja for a few weeks now. Usually when I get in fight camp, I stop. Huh. It's just like a little. What are you going to sacrifice kind of thing?
I thought it would have increased because...
Yeah, it's tough. I like it because it helps me eat. Like for me, like eating all the food to keep the weight up, that's the toughest part.
That helped me too. Fucking break us on exclusives on you.
Yeah. It's the best. But yeah, so yeah, doing that, having that, and then remember seeing the whole lead up to the fight and having that DMT trip. I remember when I hit Cruz with that right hand, that dropped him like... It knocked him out. That was the same punch that I saw in my trip.
That's crazy.
Unreal. But I remember when I pointed at him, I was like, oh, like, I was here before. I was like, just pointing at him, like, that's the one. I've seen this before.
That was that, huh?
Yeah, it was that. Yeah, I switched southpaw, and I caught his hook. He threw a hook. I caught his hook with my left hand and hit him with my right. And then I just went down. I was like, oh, because I was like, holy shit, this is the punch that knocked out. This motherfucker's not knocked out.
Wow.
So we're living it. Hey, this is it. Yeah. This is what we got to do. We're going to fight him for five rounds and have fun and enjoy it.
Yeah, do you think that DMT experience helped you?
No, because I visualized that so many times.
Okay.
Being a world champion. It wasn't even against Dom.
Yeah.
But really what made me sleep really well at night was the night before, or night before the fight, the weigh-ins. We had the ceremonial weigh-ins. Mm-hmm. And we get in that little scuffle. Because me and Dom didn't do any sit-down. Usually it's always sit-down. He did not. We didn't have that.
Kept you away from each other.
Away from each other. Yeah, for sure.
Sometimes not close. It's far enough, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah, so I get that. I was 25 years old. He thought I was some young punk coming here talking shit, and like he was the champion. Like I would too. I'd be the same way Don was, but I was who I am too. Is we see each other a lot at the PI. We talk and things like that leading up after the fight, obviously. But that night before the fight, we got into the square and the stare down, and I saw him moving. We got in that little thing, and I saw the way he moved and the way his muscles twitched. And I was like, oh, he's too slow. You can see it in the thing. There's like a UFC countdown. Oh, you're too slow. You're too slow. I just saw his muscles twitch, and that was like. I know I'm faster than him. I just got to stay defensively sound and just have fun.
I'm very hesitant to say this, but I say fuck it since Cody mentioned it. I've done DMT.
Did you cry?
No.
I almost did.
You cried?
I almost did. No, I just so scared. I remember a couple of my friends were with me. Old Lance was with me. Old buddy Danny Castillo and his little brother came in as well. And they've all done this shit. I have never done it. And I was hitting it. Aubrey says, hey, hit this until you feel funny. I'm like, all right, I'm telling you, I hit that thing like six times. The next thing I look back, and I had this, we're summoning Anaconda of the South, all these animals, spirit animals, right? Yeah. Going to the, to it. I'm like, all right, he's beating on the drum, Aubrey, boom, boom. So I'm like, oh shit, this is real. I think I have a rain stick that I'm just like, you know, everyone has like a little instrument we're doing. Dude, I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, we're in a little room like this. Yeah. I was scared, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was petrified of it. What if I never come back from this? Well, from just my brains, I don't know. I didn't know anything about it. Yeah. I just said, let's do it. And so, yeah, it was fun. I was with them. But I remember I go back and I was just like, whoa. And it sounded like, whoa. Aubrey turned into silverback gorilla. Like, swear. And he has a predominant smile, like Aubrey. Mm. I was like, whoa. Like, well, it's still him.
Well, your eyes open.
Yeah, my eyes were open. Oh, yeah.
Oh, fucking.
Yeah. I was like, oh, my gosh. And he turned into that. And I laid back on this massage bed, but it had a heating pad on. I don't know why the heating pad was on. But I hear, like, Lance and Danny's voice, like, they're, like, laughing. Like, they're laughing. And then I went to, like, school kid laugh. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was like, this is going to, like, And I was like, and then my inner voice was like, get ready for the ride of your life. And I was feeling like one of those kaleidoscopes.
Yes.
And I was like riding on the piece of the grain. Like, I was like, whoa, going down this. And I was on a crazy, most vibrant shit ever that I'll ever experience in my entire life. And then we come back to, you know, after the trip. And we're all telling it. And I'm like, everyone's listening to my shit. I'm a storyteller, dude. I'm like, I just went through. I might have saw God. Like, I literally saw God. Yeah. He sent me back down. Like, whatever I was at, I was on the right path. Because wherever he sent me through, I was going through a sandstorm. Like, crawling, dude. I was crawling. Next thing you know, I see a tiger paw. Oh, shit. And I see a black tiger and a jaguar paw. And it's like, we summoned all these animals. Turned into these animals going through these storms.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And I'm telling this story. And sitting there, and then we go to Danny. He tells his story. He's like, man, all I see black and gray. And I'm like, dude, I was dying. He was so pissed. He must have got the end of the shake of it. He was all pissed.
Mine was, and I actually the reason why I done mine was, this is exclusive for me, by the way. I'm gonna talk about this.
Tell it all.
I went to Mexico, and it was right before the Olympia, not last year, the year before last, and that ego, that fucking guy. The one that we talked about, never give up, would have been still on that stage had I not gone.
Gone and did the trip?
I had to kill my ego. And shout out to Sean Ryan, Vigilance Elite.
Oh, wow.
You know Sean Ryan. Great podcast. Massive podcast. Gets amazing guests. He was talking about it. And him and I had a friendship when we lived in Florida. And I hit him up about it. And he said, bro, I'm not going to tell you it's going to change your life, but it'll change your life. And it's, what it's going to do is you'll come back. And if you look at a clock, 12 o'clock being... you're at 5 past. But over a compounded period of time, you'll see the difference. So I'll be honest with you, I went with a kind of a disgruntled attitude. What the fuck is this going to do outside of me seeing kaleidoscopes? And I'd done the whole experience. It was a couple of day thing. I played for this private house.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole fucking shaman and everything. And I went through the experience. I won't go into the details because it's your podcast, but I ended up doing the DMT on the last day. And this thing fucking... Well, first time I done it...
You woke up naked.
Fuck, what did you go to? Give me your stories. No. The first time I done it, like you, nothing happened. I felt... But I also had this out-of-body experience where I was talking in my present, but then it was myself was hovering above, and he was telling me, like, the fuck you doing, you pussy? Stupid shit. All the way you're in Mexico doing this stupid shit. Like, and I was like, what do you think? What do you boys would think in Wales doing this? Kind of, not the drug, but like, yeah. You, what you're there and doing,
what
right?
You did,
yeah, and I had a fucking blindfold, an eye mask on. And the guy was there like, hey, listen, this is the last of it, because it was pure DMT.
Yeah.
And he talked me through a great shaman, talked me through it, okay, take it in. And because DMT is smokeless, it's just vape, I thought if I took it in, it was going to make me cough, but he was just holding it in, and then, bro, they laid me back, and I just went... The only way I can explain it is I felt everything and nothing. I felt God. I went somewhere and I can't even remember. You're like, you had fucking visions. I didn't have it. I had them, but I couldn't
remember
when I came back to like, and I was only gone for maybe, they told me a few minutes. I wasn't like, yeah, how long were you?
Like 15 minutes.
Oh yeah. I was about 8. My body's fucking weird. It just. Processes.
He's got to go through all that muscle. Yeah.
But when I came out, I felt so elated. There's this energy, this euphoria that comes from it. And obviously my goal was certain things. And now I can look back and people can say, oh, flex is placebo. Because you went out there with the law of attraction mentality, things are going to change. No, because I know what I was waking up to and the demons I had and the trauma of what I would get out of training for a bodybuilding show. I would fucking get it out to the gym. Sure. I was done with it. I was just done with waking up, like having that fucking monkey on my back and what pushed me to win, I wanted to get rid of because it was holding me back from other aspects of my life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Even being a better dad.
100%. Focus on that. Yeah, I think that for me, I didn't go in looking at anything, but I didn't know anything about DMT, just from what my friends have told me about. But I was at that point, man, I'm getting ready to fight for a world title. Let's see what's a demon. Yeah, we all have demons, man.
Yeah.
Like, I've constantly. But when I was in that, the second trip, I went the second time going through, I was more calm and relaxed, and it was like everything was slow paced. And Aubrey was a great shot. He talked us through it all. Hey, if someone comes in your trip, You try to speak to him, try to talk to him. It was a, I won't share Lance's experience, but he had a very, very good one too. Mm. And it was great. I feel like if people are listening to this, I'm not saying go out and do DMT, it's going to be life changing, but it was something, this is my experience of it. I'm not saying everyone's going to have the same experience of it, but I felt enlightened that I was on the right path. Not that I needed that DMT trip to tell me that, but it was nice to be like, wow, like I was going through some things. Like I bowed my ego, and we're
ego driven.
Ah, man, we have to admit it. We have to defeat the ego, and I think that's what I did. I was just calm, relaxed, but enlightened. And things that happened to me in that trip, some of it that I experienced happened 4 or 5 years later.
Shit, dog.
Crazy, crazy.
Like what?
There was this crazy flower, this vibrant flower. It was like almost like shooting off sparks. And I was like, what is this thing? I was like going up to it, and then it opened up, right? And my wife at the time was, or I'm sorry, ex-wife at the time, came out of it and had this little child running around. And I'm talking about hair to her, like to the ass, like long hair. I'm like, wow, I'm like, oh my gosh, this little baby girl. Absolutely unreal. You know what I mean? So fast forward a few years, she's pregnant. We're having a good, like the whole time. Oh yeah. I'm like having a girl. I saw it. You know what I mean? Having a girl. The gender reveal, it's a boy. I'm like, oh, okay. And then she's probably been a boy with long hair. I'm like, all right. So the little things like that, like the house, winning the world championship, he said the fight that prevailed with Dominic, that was in the trip. But like I said, I didn't know anything about drugs. Like, I'm not even just saying drug, DMT, that experience. I thought I was enlightened. I would love to do it again. You know what I mean? Just knowing more about it, knowing more about my body, not wanting anything out of it, just to go and do it. But I feel like I haven't been at the right mind or even stage of my life to go there and do that again. I think that's something that you have to be like, hey, because I think it can go either way.
I was.
You was at that.
I was.
At that, you needed the turning point, right?
I was at a real fucking, like a rough part, crossroad, put a good fucking act on. But same. Every day I was just like, man, I know there's more. And I just, God puts people in your way at the right time. Sean just dropped the podcast. I hit him up. No, I didn't instantaneously. This took a long time. In fact, he chased me up. Hey, have you gone yet?
Yeah.
And then I came back with pretty much everything I asked for.
It's great.
And I was awesome. Able to sit at the Olympia weekend and
enjoy
genuinely,
it.
Yeah.
Be present.
Yeah. Because you have so many similar characteristics just listening to you, and I'm nodding because even you were talking about not being present. I wasn't present for any one of my wins but the last.
Yeah.
Because I called myself and I said to myself, I have to be here for this is the last one I'm doing in the 212. Ended up being the last one I ever fucking done. Yeah. And I can remember the heat on the stage. I know I've talked about this in the podcast, but all these different things that I were just part
senses.
Of data.
Yeah. You were present, so you felt the light, you felt the probably the sweat, all that stuff. That helps you be engaged in the present. And that's what I've learned. I've had that stuff. I've had that. But I didn't really know that I needed that until I started losing. So I started losing. I'm like, man, I don't have these feelings. Like, man, I was scared to death going to every fight, the UFC walkout. Oh, my gosh, my heart was racing. I was nervous, scared, anxious, excited, fucking ready to go. Couldn't wait to get into the fight. And then it was the point where I was like, man, I had no feeling, no emotions, no nothing. Numb, just walking down there, like, all right, just hoping for the best. And there's a lot of things that happened outside of life, too, that at that time where I was pulling me back, or I was just blinded by a lot of it. But
distractions
of, and it wasn't that I all became the world champion that I forgot who I was or what I needed to do. It was a lot. 25 years old,
being the
came
champ.
From nothing. I went from unranked to world champion in the same calendar year. It's
fucking wild, bro.
Yeah, it was awesome. I remember going and like, man, I can't wait to get a fight. Fighting at 8-8, 10-10. Like, oh, here's some new contracts. Like, and I kept getting different contracts. And Dana calling you in the office and meeting with Lorenzo, Vatita, and Shelby, like Sean Shelby. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. This is cool.
Fucking right.
Oh, it's great. I'm like, hey, guys, I want to stay busy. And they kept me busy that year. I fought 4 times and became world champion.
That's a hell of a lot in 1 year.
It is. It came at a cost. It really did. Body broke down because I was constantly in fighting camps. Mm. And I think for the Takeda Mizugaki fight, man, that was probably my worst camp. But I knew, like, fighting him, like, I'm knocking him out, I'm fighting for the world title.
And you did.
And I did, yeah. And it was honestly the worst camp that I had, body-wise, just everything was just, you got to go in there and just do the job to get it done. And then it was back and forth with getting a contract for the UFC, or for the title shot against Dominic. But that was a good year.
How did you stay humble and driven during that period of time, because obviously being so young, getting this fortune, sponsors, lots of attention, media coverage, people recognizing you everywhere you go, because you can't really hide what you look like with the neck tats. And
yeah, yeah, I know, right?
What was that like?
Honestly, that still to this day, like, I get, it makes me feel uncomfortable. You get those genuine fans that come up like, hey, man, I really love how you fight and you go out there and just put it all on. I truly like that. But some of the people that get all crazy, oh, my gosh, what are you, you're at Whole Foods or whatever. What are you doing here? That makes me feel like I never pictured about being like that kind of figure to someone or to act like that. I just want to be the best in the world.
You know, it's cool, I mean? Though, right?
It is, but sometimes it makes me just feel so like, it gives me anxiety about it. Like, I'm like, I'm just the same, man, I'm just here getting groceries. You know, like, I don't know, it just, I never pictured that, you know, so it's for me, like, I love meeting my fans and people that truly support me for who I am and what I'm able to do inside. And if they're true fans, it's great, but it took a while. Like, I would always go home and to Ohio, and that's where I was, like, my quiet space. I remember going down one time, going home one time, and this really was set in. I was at the gas station and ran to one of my teachers, and she's, oh my gosh, I gotta get a picture. She goes, my son's not going to believe that you're here. I was like, oh, I'm like, I grew up on Dawson Street, right down three houses down from you guys the whole time, crashing my bikes and getting all kinds of trouble. You know what I mean? In my mind, I'm like, oh, this is, that's what I'm like, oh, okay. So what I'm doing is what I was able to do and where I was able to come from is I look at it, motivated people and things like that. But I just never, I never like that. Even walking into the arena, oh, I hate that. I really hate that. Yeah, I just black out.
Some people love that.
I'm in the cage. You know what I mean? I know some people love that shit. They're clapping hands. Yeah. My last fight, I hit a couple fans' hands. Oh, okay, let me try this out.
Sensory pop.
Yeah, sensory pop. Let me just try this. And then I was like, whoop. I was in the rafters. I was like, nope, come back to it. Go back to blacking out and just in the cage. It's uncomfortable. I've always been like that. Like, we even walking into a gymnasium, full of gymnasium or wrestling. I don't know. It's crazy. But when I'm in the actual action, I don't see anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll hear coaches and stuff like that. Maybe glimpse of Theo, little things like that. But I just like to be in there. Yeah. I could fight in front of nobody. I just like to be in my mind. I like to be in my mind.
Did you like the Apex?
I love the Apex. I love the Apex when there's no one there.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was like, man, I'm grabbing three of my friends from school. Grabbing three. He's got his three friends. And we're fighting. That's it. You know what I mean? That felt like old school, just primal. Man, I felt like I was
back in that Mexican fucking restaurant.
Yeah, dude. Honestly, it was like, this is some primal shit. This is cool. It was awesome. And then the next time I fought there at the Apex, it was packed. And you could not hear anything. It was packed like sardines in there. Like, it was so loud. I think it was louder than a lot of the T-Mobile fights because it's a smaller space acoustically. Dude, I just remember the Rob Font fight. I was not my best performance at all, and I could not get my body for the life of me to get going. And I kept hearing my coaches do this and then this. I'm like, this dude's hitting me, and I'm like, dude, just hit me enough hard enough. Like, knock, I can't, my legs are dead. And that was my first fight back from COVID, and I was just, dude, I felt like I was breathing through a straw.
Yeah.
Like, after the first round, I could not believe how I've never been physically fatigued like that in my entire life of doing anything, training, nothing. I couldn't believe it. I got to fight this guy for fucking four more rounds.
It's the first.
Yeah, it was my first fight. Yeah, that's the first round. I walked back to him like, thought I was just like lactic acid building. Yeah. I'm like, oh, man. But it was pretty sick going into the fight.
Was that COVID?
It was my first fight back from COVID, but I wore that damn whoop strap, the whoop, and I was like, man, I'm not going to check it. I felt like shit. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to check it. And then the curiosity killed the cat. I check it right before I'm getting ready to go to the arena. It was like 14% recovered. HRV was low. I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm like,
what a mind fuck.
Yeah, what a mind fuck. Yeah, so I quit Whoop. I like, fuck Whoop. I'm never doing that.
Well, if Whoop wants to sponsor him, he's open for entertainment. Yeah,
they got to throw me at least six figures. Something crazy. I have PTSD. I have
shit.
Nightmares. No, but so then I was like, all right, fuck, it's all right, good. But now it felt good. And after that first round, I could not believe how. And Rob Font, he's a great fighter. He has a great, comes from a great camp. But yeah, it was just crazy fight.
You were talking about your friends and stuff and bringing your friends to that particular fight or Apex fight, right? I have a lot of friends that back home, they've known me. I want to say I've never changed. Obviously, there's a spotlight on me and you change for the spotlight, right? But the core of me, I've not changed. Yeah. But I've also, and I'm sure you'll attest to this because we come from small towns, a lot of my friends, unfortunately, the ones actually were in school that were meant to succeed ended up not.
Yeah.
They got caught up.
Yep.
Some in jail, passed away.
Yep.
I'm sure that's the same thing, right?
Yeah, it's like you said, I've not changed. I have the same friends that I go back. Me and my girl just went back for Christmas for 2 weeks, and I never go out, but I was like, oh, my brother was in town, so we went out to this little bar, and everybody and their brother was out. I stuck to the wall. I don't drink, so we stuck to the wall. Everyone coming up talking, and everyone was like, she swore. And everyone that came up had a story, a fight story.
Yeah.
And it was the same, it was different fight stories. I'm like, that's what we did. Like, we had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
We fought and fought. Yeah. That was it. And so it's my best friends that I've grown up with since I was in grade school. I always see them. I always go and see them, grab lunch, grab coffee, and they're doing well. They're doing amazing. A lot of my buddy AJ, he fought with me growing up with my uncle. So he's done that. And now he's a shop teacher at a vocational school, and he's a junior high coach, wrestling coach. So, yeah, he's doing good. I always go back and see those guys. But, yeah, like I said, it's a lot of them are I grew up with are dying, incarcerated, hooked on pills. Man, meth and heroin is really bad.
Same.
And it's sad to see. I'm like, damn. I have Facebook. So, like, a lot of my Facebook, my just Facebook, that my athlete page, mm-hmm. is all, like, my just people that I went to school with. And I'm like, I go through this sometimes, and I'll tell my girl, I just can't believe how some people – live and what they say on here, and just like it's like a it's just crazy to me, you know. I mean, what it's like, that's why I feel so blessed every day and so thankful for first that God put a dream inside me and let me dream that and then vision and then have the courage to chase it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with his help, because there's sometimes, man, I was down on my knees crying, God, please help me out of this, show me the way, trust me, just show me like I'm on the right path. So yeah, I'm just thankful for just having that dream and then having the courage to chase it, because some people don't even have dreams. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It's
like,
crazy.
They just we just go through every day, just some content. Yeah, I never was content. I always wanted to be, I didn't know what I was going to be.
Mm-hmm. But you knew that you were going to be,
it was just something
better.
Yeah, something. Yeah. I wanted something. I thought I was going to be a wrestler. Obviously, I was going to be a football player. So yeah, that kind of. I love sports. I loved it. Something, but in fighting, I was like, all right. And then my weight classes, and then it was like, I want to be in the UFC. But I was like, 155. Them guys are cutting from 200 pounds. Like, I don't know. Like I'm 150, 155 soaking wet. And then that's when I was like, WC. That's why. And you know, Uriah was the. I used to watch his YouTube channel. Dude, his YouTube channel back in the day.
Oh, yeah?
And, like, the TAM radio, they had the podcast. And this looked like they had, trust me, I didn't know Sacramento was Sacramento. I thought California was California. Dude, I'm moving out to California. I'm Ohio. Okay, I'm moving out to California. I'm fucking going to learn surf. I'm going to the beach every day. I went to Sacramento, and it's the armpit of California. You know what I mean? It was, like, no beaches, nothing. I love Sacramento. It was awesome. Yeah. I would move back there in a heartbeat if I had the chance to, for sure. But he definitely, catfished me. Catfished me on California, Sacramento, for sure. He don't even know how to surf. He body surfed. He took us to Point Arena one time, and it was going to fight Frankie Edgar.
Mm.
He had a bodysuit that he normally is, but he was gaining weight to go back at the featherweight. Oh, my gosh. It took him literally an hour getting this wetsuit.
Oh, fuck off.
And it was freezing cold. I'm like, dude, I'm like,
just give up.
And we wanted to go. Like, we were sitting on the beach, and we threw the football for so long, and then we had our coach, Fabio, was playing soccer. We was kicking the soccer ball. I'm like, all right, after an hour of this, I'm ready to go. This dude went out there looking like a fat seal. Dude, I'm telling you, like a fat, just, if I was a shark, eating his ass. Boss. He's body surfing on the waves in the suit. All he's going up, like, just body. I'm like, oh, you're, I'm like, you surfing? He's like, no, I'm body surfing.
Oh, my God. Why did I show up?
Out there by himself for 2 hours in literally freezing cold water, looking like a seal.
Did you go in?
Hell no.
Oh, hell no.
No way. No. It was freezing. It was freezing cold. He had a wetsuit on to keep him warm.
Yeah.
That he had, took an hour to get on. But yeah, he bamboozled me into thinking that's, so I was out there. I'm like, well, in California. I'm like, hey, get out there. I'm like, where's the ocean? And like, oh, dude, you're in Sacramento. We got the river. I'm like, oh, man, I got the river back home.
Yeah, I can stay back now. The only reason I mentioned about back home, and obviously I know the podcast. What are we at, Tyus? The podcast?
119.
Oh, damn. Nice. There we go. We'll land the plane soon.
Killed it.
Because obviously when I go back home, there's a lot of guys that will say, you are one of the beacons of hope for us. And I'm sure you, and I know this for a fact, go back home, you've got all these kids that are wrestling, obviously your uncle's in high school teaching these kids as well, but all these young kids are looking up to you, being like, wow, he made it from this town. I know, I knew where he used to live on this street.
Yep.
And here he is. Top of the Tree. It's a massive inspiration. And you really, whether you think about it, I'm planting that seed in your head, because that is honestly only because I have a very similar upbringing. Teachers told me I was going to make it. It was only one life for me, and that was military or, well, jail or professional rugby. Didn't do all three, as you can tell. But it was also, again, the fact that I didn't have anybody that kind of made it out of my town. They played professional rugby to a high standard, but there was nobody that came over to the United States and became something. Yeah. So I didn't know, like you, I was on a mission, on a plan, but I knew that I was bigger than what I was being told.
Right.
So you going back home and seeing all these young, these guys, friends that you say they're not, they're complacent. But again, you're the stories, and I'm sure there's these mythological stories that grown tremendously from the original fight you had at like 12 years old.
Let the eagle go.
Yeah, I know.
Show off to my girl.
Yeah. But that's amazing, man. And in ending the podcast, we now talk about the good dad gang, as I fucking text you. There's, I message you probably more than anything about stuff on Instagram when I see you with your boy. You guys are like linked to the hip. He goes everywhere with you, and you're such a good dad, mate. I love it. I love watching from afar when you're at different places where I've seen you at the same time, Project Wellbeing, and your boy's there, and you're off being a savage, and then you come back, and then you put your dad hat on. Yep. It's amazing, mate. I love it.
Yeah, Kai's at the Project Wellbeing marking up the white couches. Like, but man, Kai got to take his shoes off. He got the black marks everywhere. I'm like, why are you getting a white couch? He was so pissed. It's Italian leather, man.
Oh, man. All right, perks of bringing the champ in. Yeah, but yeah, how having Kai changed your life?
Man, it's so much. As a father, you can tell. You can, you know, have the same feelings. But for me, I didn't have a father in my life. So I was like, man, I didn't want to miss anything. Mm. I remember we were in the hospital and the nurses were trying to change his diaper. I'm like, I got one. They're like, looked at me all like sideways. That's my son. I got him. I didn't want to. I gave him his first bath and his little. They gave us a little plastic bin, like they had all his stuff. I gave him his bath. Like I didn't want it to be hands on.
Wow.
I remember I just go in there. Sometimes he'd be sleeping in his bath, and then I'd go and check to see if he's still breathing.
I do that.
I'm like, okay, all right, I can go back. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, man. It changed a lot. You know what I mean? Especially I was a world champion at the time, so I was like, trying to balance that, really trying to balance the being a father, being this world champion, trying to defend the title, trying to win the title back, and being present. It was tough, man. Like, yeah. I went through that period of being numb, going to the fights, because I just, man, God, I was worried. We're gonna win this fight. How am I gonna? What's gonna happen? Like, I have a son now. Like, I have to. And it was tough, man. I failed a lot at a lot of things, but one thing I always, the first time that I held him in the hospital, I said to him, I said, Kai, you know, I'm always going to be here for you. Made that promise to him, and I'm always will. And I cried a little bit. I was like, man, it was awesome and exciting. I remember the first time holding him skin to skin. I was like, man, I just had a little conversation with him. I couldn't hold it back. I just freaking started crying. And I was like, man, Kai, you will never have to worry about where your dad is going to be at. If he loves you, he's always going to be proud of you. He's going to teach you the way. That's something I always wanted. Luckily, I had a great mother that, you know, went above and beyond for us, but like to be able to have that connection with my son, that's why I felt like it put in a lot of perspective too. Like, man, like how can I have anger or resentment or any negative feeling for a guy that was never in my life? I just felt sorry for him. I mean, and I was like, man, why do I feel like I feel sorry for him, but he doesn't get to experience what I'm experiencing right now. You know, just that skin to skin, holding your son, watching your son, all the stages of crawling, little things like that. Like, I was like, man, and I still to this day, he's about to be 6 in less than 2 weeks. I still think of that. I'm like, man, you miss out on so much. If you're not there for your children. Like, I feel sorry for the parents that have kids that aren't involved or don't want to be around them. I could never imagine not being there for my son.
Was that because your dad was not there for you?
Wholeheartedly had to be, you know what I mean? Wholeheartedly. I was like, how could you, this is half of you into this person, this little person that needs you to teach him life. I was like, how can you not want to be in this child's life and see this beautiful human grow and learn and first step, everything, man. I love it. Obviously it's It's boring the first few months. It's boring just to eat, sleep, but like I was shits, blowout shits, changing diapers. Oh gosh,
going through it, no man.
Oh man, so the travel on the airplane the first time he shit through four diapers, and it was like going and changing that little bathroom. Oh, just little things like that, you know. His first tooth pull out, just man, just awesome. Now he wrestles. I love it. I can't get enough of. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, the Lord blesses me with many days on this planet. For him and us to just experience so many memories together. That's what I pray for. Everything else is just a plus. I want that. Everything else that God gives me and lets me see and do, just let me be in my son's life to where I can have a positive impact on him, to where he can go throughout life knowing his dad loved him and he's proud of him and taught him things.
What kind of things do you install in him at this young age?
Same thing that my mother did. Never quitting, never giving up. I remember at wrestling practice a few months ago, they were doing like this wrestling stance, staying in a wrestling stance. It's tough for me even to hold it for 3 minutes and stuff. And I see it like, all right, the kids were coming out of their stance. So I was like, all right, coaches says, you got to stay in your wrestling stance for 3 minutes, starts the clock, 5-6-year-olds. They're like, oh, man, they're in their stance. And I see Kai's little legs and arms just shaking, like shaking. And it's only a minute in. And it's shaking. I'm like, wow. And I see some of the other kids dropping or laying up against the wall or crying, and I just see kind of looking at me. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'll just let him do his own thing. And so then he got done, did it all, didn't stop, stand stance. After practice, he said, Dad, he said, oh my gosh, he goes, that was hard. My legs were shaking. I was like, yeah, that's good, Kai. I said, things that you're gonna have to do in life that you like to do. I said, do you like doing wrestling? Do you like coming here? He's like, oh yeah, Dad, I love it. I was like, things that you like in this life are not going to be easy. They're going to be like that. They're going to be hard. You're gonna have to push through those hard times. But hey, say what? You didn't quit. You didn't cry. You didn't get out of your stance. You did it. You pushed through it. You got better today. So just little things like that. And that's why I love it. I want him to be a great wrestler. I want him to be a great athlete. That's something that I was, and I can bond with him over that. But I mean, he's not. But I want him to go in there and have what it taught me. The dedication, the consistency, the struggle when things are tough. That sport is a very tough sport. I had my brother the whole time. You're not touching your knees on the push-ups. We're doing 200 push-ups. That's tough.
They say wrestling is top 5 hardest sports to do.
I would have to say. There's a lot of tough sports in it, but wrestling is, especially at the young age. All those kids and just where you're at with your body. You're still trying to develop in your body. But yeah, just showing like that to me was I was proud of him. And then his first takedown he got, because he was getting his ass kicked. He goes with a lot of the coaches' kids that go a couple times a week. Kai just goes once a week, and sometimes he takes some time off. Like, we took a couple months off from my fight, and then we went to Ohio. He got sick. I got sick. But he got his first takedown. I wasn't there. His mom filmed it, thank God. But it wasn't that he got the takedown. It was just like he looked over at his mom, and just the smile on his face. I was like, man.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. Because he's getting pushed around a little bit, and then he saw a little bit of aggression out of him. And he like wrestled hard, got and slammed. And then he was like telling me how he slammed the kid down, and I just kept going down. He goes, I didn't think I was going to take down, but I got the takedown.
Yeah.
He goes, I got the takedown. And he was just so bummed. But like seeing in the video, I just kept going like with the little video. Just to where he got the takedown, and then he looked over at his mom and smiled. And I was like, man, that honestly, that kind of choked me up a little bit. I was like, that was awesome. Because I remember when I would get my first takedowns, or I would, he's fearful of losing. Like, even if like, he's super competitive, and so am I. Like, I ruined family game night because Uno attack.
Yes,
Uno attack, dude. I fucking wanted to burn my whole house down. I don't know how old I was. I had the last Uno card, and the Uno attack just shuffled like 20 at me. Oh, man. Mom whooped my ass. I don't know how old I was. It was bad. So we couldn't play family games anymore because I was too competitive. I hated to lose.
Fucking connect.
So Kai's the same way. If, like, I race him up the stairs. I'm like, first one up the stairs, or last one up the stairs is rotten egg. And then he'll be like, oh, it's not a race, Dad. And he'll like, be pissed that I'm racing. So I'm like, or he'll change it up. Last one up the stairs wins. So he's so competitive. So he has these little conversations. He's, hey, Dad, he goes, what if I don't get the takedown? What if I'm like, Kai, it's fine. As long as you wrestle hard, try your best, you're going to have those days where you're not going to get the takedown. You're going to get taken down. You're not going to win. You don't win every day in life, but if you stay consistent and keep going, you're going to get better, and then you're always going to be winning. So it's good to have those thoughts like, I don't want to lose, but don't let it cripple you not going and just having fun and enjoying it. That's why I always want to remember, just enjoy it. Even to myself, too, like, why do I do this? Because I enjoy it. At the end of the day, I enjoy it no matter how hard it sucks. No matter how camp is, I'm in the grind of it right now. It sucks, but I love it.
You still love it.
Oh, I still love it. gets me up every day, and just I get to chase a dream. I got 6 weeks to go out and have an opportunity to change my life even more. It was my Super Bowl's in 6 weeks. So I work for it, put everything into it. And it's the highs of highs and lows of lows. You know that. When you win, it's, oh, it's awesome. When you low, it's like, when you lose, it's, oh, man, it's tough. You got to do some soul searching. Yep. You have to definitely do, and you have to have good people around you. I think that's what I really experienced a lot, is like having people that truly care about you win, lose a lot, draw, and just be making sure you're okay after it. And, hey, get the next one.
I should have asked this earlier. I don't want to prolong this any longer, but this is very interesting to me. After a loss, you go back to the changing room. What is that mentality like back there then?
Oh, man, it's losing sucks. I hate to lose. I'll take it. I'll take my loss. But if you like losing, man, you're not a winner. It's tough, man. You get back there. And for me, it's like I'm bummed out about it. But then I look around. I'm like, man, I see not only me, but all my coaches and my teammates. They put in a lot of work. They put in a lot of dedication. Mm-hmm. They wanted this more. My uncle, my mom always is, she's a stone cold killer, man. She's always just win, lose. She doesn't show too much emotion. Never did. She always gave us tough love growing up. She had to be our mother and our father. Mm-hmm. But still, I know it feels like, it's like, man, I feel like I let them down at times, and I let myself down. And then always the hindsight's 20/20. We're like, I should have did this, should have did that. It's just so much emotions off of a loss. But I've learned to never be too high off a win and never be too low off a loss, trying to stay balanced. I'll win, all right, we're going. Those guys that win their fights and they have six after parties, and you don't see them in the gym until 3 months later, and they're still throwing parties, and I win. Dude, you want to fight. And that's the extreme. And the guys that are so embarrassed after a loss that they don't come back to the gym either, they're just like, no, the confidence is down. It's tough. I mean, you have to find that balance. Like, how bad do you really want it? I look at it like this, Alex. If the worst thing that happens to me in my life is I lose a UFC fight, then I live a damn good life. There's so many people in the world, hundreds of thousands of millions probably, that want to be in the UFC just to say they fought in the UFC. You know what I mean? That's the worst thing that happens to me. I remember when I won the world title, or when I lost the world title. I had to go do all the media. I just got knocked out by TJ Madison Square Garden. It was like crazy fight. I went there, did the media. I was not in my right mind still, but I was like, this is what I have to do. This is what I'm going to do. I can't remember any interview, a question they asked me. So I was like, I'm getting this back. I don't know when. Still chasing it years and years later. But it's one of those things that is just, it's tough. Just find the balance. I can't hide forever. I felt lost, you know. So just finding the balance with everything in life, too. But definitely wins and losses, dude. It's the highest of highs and lowest of lows. I mean, you can never feel so high off a win, and there's honestly never can feel too low off a loss. But a lot of those things, like, I find who you're around, who's in your circle with, my son, like little things that I look to, I'm like, hey, like, this window closes. And once this chapter of my life's over, it's going to be. So do the best I can, enjoy it, and just be present. Like we talked about earlier, being present, because it's going to be gone. I can't fight forever. I'd love to, but Father Time gets us all.
This was a chapter.
Yep.
And as you're still in it and going to win it again, you're doing it with a completely different mindset now. You've experienced loss. You know the hardship of that. You've probably sharpened your team around you because you know who's really there and who isn't. And also, you've got this incredible foundation that really wasn't there when you won the first title.
Yep.
So you said, whole different animal on this chase now, more calm, collected, and probably somebody that just wants it more than ever, you would assume, right?
Tasted it. When you taste blood, you want more. I've been to that top of that mountain. And it's, I know what it takes to get there. Now I got to know what it takes to stay there. That's the difference of this path. Yeah. I know what it takes to get there. Now I got the ingredients to keep it there. That's where I'm, one fight at a time. Not looking over anything, but this fight, April 13th with Davison Figueiredo, I am ready for war. He calls himself the God of War, but I'm no love. So it's going to be a clash, and I'm so excited to open up this card.
And certainly no love will be shown.
That's right.
At that fight.
Fuck yeah.
My man, I really appreciate this podcast. I know it's been a minute in the making, but thank you for just being so honest and open. And obviously, you mentioned something since you broke one story on there. I thought, you know what, fuck it, I'll do an exclusive.
That's the first time I did, too.
Really?
I mean, told my friends and stuff, like,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, I've never smoked DMT, but hey, like, it's...
There we go.
2024, man.
I know.
Let's go on a trip together. Let's go.
After the fight. Let's go. Cody Norlove, my friend, thank you so much. Straight out the lair. subscribe. Make sure that you're supporting this guy. Cody, what's your Instagram? And
Cody _no love. Follow me at that. Yep. YouTube will be coming soon. Hopefully you get that going.
It's just
be a podcast too. I don't know.
I know. You
get that book off. Get that Podcast for Dummies book.
After, yes.
Like Flex can do it, huh?
Shit. I don't know, bro. I just do what I do. Just nobody can understand what the fuck I'm talking about anyway. But man, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for the next chapter. And who's somebody who has been following you for a very long time, believe it or not. I knew of you. Should have said this right at the beginning of the podcast. You were sponsored by a supplement company years ago, right?
Yeah, so that was
Blackstone.
Blackstone, yep, Blackstone.
And these guys came to me and asked me, what do you think of this fight? I was like, oh, I know who this is.
Yeah.
And you only had the neck tat at the time.
Yeah.
You didn't have all the other tats.
I think I was either 1 or 2-0. Like, I just got out the alpha male.
Yeah.
Because they sent me, they used to send me all the supplements. Yeah.
And I had my Cody Nola fucking t-shirt.
Yep.
And I remember, actually, another side story, not a fucking prolong this podcast. Sorry, I'm prolonging this podcast, every in the room. But I was messaging you, if you remember, in Germany. You were really the one that planted the seed against stem cells.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, I've been great with stem cells. My body receives them well. And they help me pretty good, so.
Yeah, me too. And again, I know I'm not prolonging this anymore. We can do another podcast on another time.
Part two coming soon. Two years from now.
2 years from now, when you set up your fucking YouTube again,
yeah,
by the way.
My podcast, yeah.
And yeah, but straight out the lair. And listen, guys, I truly appreciate this incredible champion. Champion not only with a belt, but also in life, and more so than anything else. One of the best dads that I'm privileged to see as a high caliber athlete. For me, you, my man, I truly appreciate it. And we're going to see you win that belt back.
Right.
But first, we got to go through April 13th. And it's going to be that whole new version of you, my man.
Excited.
Take care. Straight out of the lair, we are out.